Hello, and welcome to the Tavern Chat Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Tenkar, your bartender in the OSR, and with me today is Matt Finch. If you have somehow, over the years, not learned who Matt Finch is, he is one of the men who was pretty much the engine behind starting up the OSR. And not only did he work on Osric, but he is the designer of Swords and Wizardry, or I guess, Matt, you wouldn't like the word designer, maybe so much as presenter, rewriter, editor.
Yeah, I don't use the word designer because, you know, what I am, and you know, and I'm good at it, but what I do is not design. It's rewriting games. Rules are not my thing. I write, you know, I think good adventures, but, you know, when we're talking about rules, I'm a rewriter, not a designer.
Okay. Yeah, we that came up last night in the Frog Chat on the new Frog Chat server. So it was a lot of discussing because, as many of you may know, there is a new Kickstarter for Swords and Wizardry. It's a Swords and Wizardry boxed set, and it had a goal of $12,000 to fund. It is, I guess, around 21 hours into funding, and it's knocking on 48,000, which is amazing. So, without further ado, Matt. Now, Matt, what I've been linked with the Frogs for a while, and I know there was a discussion at one point of putting out like a holy trilogy of core books for Swords and Wizardry as full size books. But what got you all to decide to do a box set digest sized?
Well, the starting base of that decision is just that we're starting to run out of the hardcover books that we've got out there. And so it was like, all right, so do we reprint? What do we do? And Zach and I, which is Zach Laser, who is the chief operating officer for Frog God. Zach and I wanted to do a box set because obviously Swords and Wizardry is based on original D&D, which was, itself a box set, as everybody knows. And so there's just, you know, there's always that impetus to put it into a box. But the thing about boxes is that they're a huge risk. They require selling lots of boxes because the price of boxes is relatively high unless you are picking one of the standard box sizes. And most of those are very flimsy because they're, you know, things for people on Etsy to send candy to people and stuff like that.
They're not made for real long-term storage. They're made for shipping open and discard, kind of like a right. The old department store boxes, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of them are more sturdy quality than that, but it's, yeah. You know, it's really for the small runs of boxes are for the craft market for the most part, and they are expensive. And if you want to come out with a good box set with high quality done on everything, you've really got to be ordering a large number of them before it becomes something that you're not just going to lose your shirt on. And then, of course, if you are selling in those kind of large numbers, it's not something that a couple of people can put together over the course of a week. It requires a whole lot more people to be able to put the stuff into it. So, you know, that's the economics of box sets. And a lot of people, you know, at various times have managed to put together some high quality box sets, but for the most part that was done because they had a small enough batch of sales that they could get a number of people, you know, who were just, you know, gamers in the US to put the stuff into the boxes and ship them out. And what we're looking at here is a different sort of proposition where we're going to be we're going to have to get these professionally put together, which does allow us to get them shrink wrapped, which is awesome.
Oh, nice. That means you could retail these boxes at stores.
Oh yeah, we're gonna definitely have a lot of stores that are picking up the retail box. I think most people listening to this, given what the response has been, most people probably already know, but we are offering a collector's box as well that we're only doing 500 of them, which means that we'll probably get like 525 of them because the printers always do extras to handle their own mistakes. But then you have to buy however many extras there are, but we're ordering 500 of them at max. And those 450 of them are up on the Kickstarter. We're leaving 50 behind in case we have to replace any, you know, or if we get, you know, just there's going to be, you know, free copies of it given out within the company. You just need to have some excess for that. So 450 in the Kickstarter, and it's looking like those are going to be completely gone by the end of the Kickstarter.
I think they're going to be gone by the end of the week. There's only 105 left.
Actually, the last time I counted, there's 124, because I think you're forgetting the there are some that are packs of six.
I forgot the pack of six. You're right.
Yeah, there's like two or three of those left as well. So I'm coming up with 124. Of course, we've probably sold some while we've been on this.
There are three. I just refreshed it right before we started this. There are three sets of six left. So that would be. Now I got to do math. It's 123 left.
Okay, so we sold one since I did my math.
So that would mean that roughly 320 some odd have been sold in less than a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I've known that this was coming up. I discussed this with Zach here or there, and I was excited because I figured a box set for Swords and Wizardry would be popular, and it would probably bring in not just the pure Swords and Wizardry fanboys and fangirls, but bring people in from outside because it's a box set. Boxes are things that people like just to hold. Like, physical books are cool. This is even cooler because games come in boxes. But to hit nearly 48,000 this quickly is beyond my expectations on any level.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's, you know, like I said, yesterday was a you know, a hell of a wild ride.
Wow. So now this is going to be what, four booklets in the box?
Yeah, it's going to be four booklets inside the box. Plus, we hit a stretch goal with where we're putting in dice, and we hit a stretch goal where we're putting in a little pad of character sheets. And that is likely to be all of the physical changes that get made to the box set as a result of stretch goals, unless we sell really more than even this Kickstarter makes it look like we're going to sell, just because of the cost of putting something into a box, you know, is relatively high. We got firm quotes for the book with just the boxes, the book with the boxes and the dice, and the book with the boxes plus dice plus character sheets. And so I doubt we're going to have anything more physical. We hit a lot of the digital stretch goals that we had on there. We hit one just before you and I got on here. I think one of them was at 47,000. So I updated that, and now we're at $47,934. So it's actually starting to pick up again with the morning.
Yeah. And the 47,000 stretch goal was more variant style character sheets.
Yes. Because people love character sheets, and you know, and that's something that's that people really don't much care whether they're getting a printed piece of paper or whether they have to print it out on a PDF. Most people, you know, don't mind printing it out on the PDF, but they love having different types of character sheets. You know, hey, you like this one or you like this one? And people get attached to their character sheets. I mean, everybody still remembers the old Goldenrod character sheets that of AD&D. So yeah, I mean, character sheets are an important part of the game. You wouldn't really expect it, and of course, there's a lot of people who just, you know, write them on an index card, write them on a piece of paper. But I think once your character looks like they're going to survive for a while, you kind of like the feel of recording it, you know, more formally, because I think this guy's going to live. And of course, it's kind of like painting a mini; you usually die right afterwards. But
well, I like the form fillable character sheets that you guys hit at 25. Cause you don't really see that around too often, but stuff that's not going to change my stats and the adjustments and all that stuff. I think that's awesome. That's where it should be. That's form fillable is awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, you don't, you know, there are some things where you don't realize that it's widely wanted by people. You know, we had enormous response for bookmarks when we were talking to people in the Discord channel. And I may do another Discord chat again tonight. I'll put an announcement out about that in the update or something like that. But we've gotten, you know, great feedback. But you know, I was really shocked that people wanted PDF bookmarks. I mean, I can see wanting a printed bookmark, kind of. It wouldn't be a real big deal to me. But PDF bookmarks was something I was just like, you know, that is just bizarre. And I'm sure that some of these stretch goals people are looking at, they're like, that is just bizarre. Why would it be there? But every stretch goal that's there is something that a fair number of people wanted to see done. So, you know, I think we're covering, you know, by talking to people, we're covering a lot of bases that we probably wouldn't have thought of covering without that kind of fan response. And that's one of the, you know, real benefits of Swords and Wizardry, is that we've got a really big fan base out there that we've built up, you know, since 2008 or whenever it was that it was first
published. Yeah.
I think it was 2008. And so we can get a lot better feedback than if we were just coming out with it for the first time. So, you know, that's helpful.
Now, it was discussed last night, but most of the listeners here weren't in the chat on Frog last night. You have spell books. So the magic user spell book would be different than those spell, not different spells, but different way of presenting the spells than in the actual rule set, in the actual four books.
Well, not in a very big way. There are
no, it's just like by level or alphabetically.
like everything, you know, in the old school community, there are two very vehement sides of a discussion. And one of those sides is dead set on the idea that spells should be alphabetical. And the other side is dead set on the idea that they should be by level. And I am dead set on the idea that they should be alphabetical. And, you know, other people in the company are dead set on the idea they should be by level. So what we're doing is, you know, in the book itself, we've always done a by level list that doesn't have the spell descriptions at the front. And then the spell, you know, descriptions themselves are alphabetical. And I think that what we're going to do in the spell book is we'll go ahead and do them by level. That's not actually the reason for having the spell books, though. They were asked for because people pointed out that that you get your books age relatively fast when you have people thumbing through them for
spell. God.
And, you know, these are high quality books, but I think the actual quote was, I don't want my players getting their grubby fingers on my book.
Well, and that, you know, and not for nothing, that is a valid quote. And if I look back at my old Dungeon Master's Guide, I can open up that book to the combat tables and the nearby saving throws just by looking at the dirty edges on the pages.
Yep. Yeah. Mine are the same way.
You know, and it's the same thing when it comes to spells. I can find the first level magic user spells in my player's handbook the same way, because I was always constantly going to those low level spells.
Well, see, that's why you don't need bookmarks.
Well, you know what? After a while, you obviously don't. Yeah, you got a point there. You know, the PDF bookmarks, though, that does surprise me. I would be like, I mean, I get bookmarks from other Kickstarters, and they're beautiful ones. Astonishing Swordsmen and Sorcerers, Fire Pepperoni had some, and I couldn't tell you where they are right now because they're probably underneath books on a shelf. I hate to admit that, but I they look awesome. I don't use them.
I really don't either. I mean, there are sometimes when I would use them, but it's not during a game. When I'm actually writing a module or something like that, every once in a while, I think, gee, it'd be kind of nice to have a bookmark. But then I just grab, you know, the electric bill off of the, you know, off the table and stick that in there. So
nice. Damn. Now, and I'm going to take this back a little bit. When you decided to do Swords and Wizardry, okay, you'd already worked on Osric, and your role in Osric was, besides, I guess, being legal advice as to how close to the gray line we can get, but what made you decide to do Swords and Wizardry after that project?
Well, okay. So stepping back, the role in Osric was, it was coming up with the idea that you could use the SRD to recreate the original rules. And so I wrote basically the player section of Osric entirely. And so Osric 1.0 was almost entirely my work. And however, Stuart Marshall took it over and partly for, you know, honestly, for legal reasons that he's being that he's in the UK, it would be a lot harder for Wizards to sue over that. People ought to realize that the whole idea that a retro clone is okay legally is because of Osric and Swords and Wizardry and the other retro clones that were written in there. And it was the fact that they weren't challenged. When we first came out with Osric, we were, you know, 90% expecting a lawsuit about that. So Stuart was the one who was named as the author, and I was named as the initial author on that. And then in Osric 2.0, and I don't want to discount Stuart's role in that, because he did the editing and he wrote, you know,
right.
And Osric, he really came in a big way in Osric 2.0, that was entirely his baby. And that was after people said, hey, we want a playable version of this game rather than just something that's used as a reference for building modules. You know, so that was Osric. And then there's kind of it's a little bit of a sad story really about Swords and Wizardry, because at that point in time, I played OD&D, but I played it as a stripped down version of first edition. But the guy who founded the forum called Knights and Knaves, it was a guy named Jerry Mapes, and he played OD&D. And he kept asking me, hey, when is it that you're going to do one of these things for OD&D? And he was pretty sick. And you know, we knew he was going to die at some point. And now he has passed away. So in a way, starting on that project was somebody's, you know, deathbed request. But as I worked on it more, I realized that what I play is basically the plus Greyhawk, the Greyhawk supplement, which is anyone who's not familiar with the history of OD&D, the Greyhawk supplement was kind of a watershed, because that was when different character classes began using different dice for their hit points at the levels. The variant dice other than the D20 and the D6 started really appearing in the game at that point, and that was when they added thieves. There were just a lot of developments done in the Greyhawk supplement that changed the game fairly radically. And so that was what I wrote first, which, you know, we ended up calling Swords and Wizardry Core as
right.
opposed to Swords and Wizardry White Box. Now, really, what we're focusing on is Swords and Wizardry Complete, just because, you know, for one thing, it's easier to explain than, you know, this is the three books plus Greyhawk, so you don't get to be a druid. You know, that is
right.
kind of a difficult sell. Especially when you do what I do, which is running conventions, and some 12-year-old shows up at the table and they say, I want to play a ranger. And it's kind of hard to say, no, you know, you can't.
Okay. You're a fighter, but you think you're a ranger.
Yeah. So, you know, so I use Complete nowadays, and that's, it's, you know, I've gotten, you know, really comfortable with the stuff that's additional on top of Greyhawk. And it's not like I didn't really like it. It's just, I didn't use it for simplicity's sake. What Swords and Wizardry Complete is just, you know, everything that was in there up until TSR came out with Advanced D&D. And so it's all of the books, all of the supplements, plus various articles from the Strategic Review and the Dragon Magazine. Because, for example, there was no Ranger in OD&D. The Ranger was written as an article in Strategic Review. And it was like I was saying also last night in the chat, that's why we have no illusionist. The no illusionist is for legal reasons. It's because the version of the illusionist that came out in the Strategic Review was wildly different than anything that has survived into the SRD. And so it didn't have the legal protections of the open game license that Wizards came out with in 2000. So that just wasn't something that, you know, that would have been a copyright violation if we had put it in. So it's, you know, we have no illusionist, unfortunately.
That's, I always find that interesting how that works and why. And we owe a lot to the OGL, and we owe a lot to the OGL. I'm not going to say being pushed, but certainly people stretching it to find out where the limits were. And we wouldn't have this strong OSR community we have right now if it wasn't for that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's we owe, you know, it's worth remembering that we really owe a tremendous debt to Wizards. You know, anybody who still wants to be mad at Wizards can point out that everybody who was involved with the OGL pretty much has been fired at Christmas time, but over the years.
the different Christmas purges, yes.
But yeah, I mean, we really do owe a tremendous debt to Wizards of the Coast for letting that happen. I mean, they didn't know that this was going to be something that was possible. And I do think that some of the retro clones that are out there have gone outside, but they haven't realized, you know, that it's not a free for all. You know, it was real clear to us back in 2006 that it was not a free for all with the copyright laws. And I think, you know, the fact that there hasn't been any legal repercussions, you know, which is because the early ones were carefully written. I think some of the later retro clones don't quite realize that they might contain some copyright violations because it does have to be based on the SRD, but, you know, that's neither here nor there, really.
Yeah, because by not making a claim, Wizards has pretty much let it happen, I guess. Right? If you don't protect your work, it loses protection.
No. That's not true. That's only true for trademarks.
Okay.
Yeah, for copyright, they there's a statute of limitations involved in copyright, but you know, the fact that, you know, if somebody violates the copyright and you don't do anything about it, you've got a long time to do something about it.
All right.
Yeah, but with a trademark, you have to defend it. And I won't go into a whole exposition.
Oh, no, yeah.
Intellectual property law.
That will put some of these listeners to sleep. Some of them will love it. Don't get me wrong. I've had discussions with members of the community about this stuff. And it's just like, I don't know how you know so much about this and not being a lawyer, but okay.
Well, actually, Alex Cameron and I are probably doing a panel at the upcoming Gamehole Con about some of the legalities that are involved with IP law, and also just some, you know, basic information for people who want to start a game company, like, you know, what does it mean to incorporate and stuff like that. But yeah, there is a very high interest level. It's a small subset of people that are out there, but you know, there are people who are super curious about how this stuff works, and it's not generally easy to find answers. I mean, you can get a few basic answers from law firms who publish, you know, here's a little summary of intellectual property law, but you know, right. There are a lot of people who are interested in learning more about the details of it. So we're going to do a panel on that.
Well, if you and Alex are doing the panel, that's one I'll have to show up to. Firstly, because the idea of incorporation, I've had thoughts about doing that. So it would be nice to hear some proper legal advice as opposed to advice I find on the internet that probably is improper. So, yeah. All right. Now I got another question since we've gone into the past. Now let's maybe, what's the future for Swords and Wizardry after this box set? Obviously, I think the interest in the box set obviously exceeded expectations. So I'm wondering what the future holds since, we're hitting new plateaus, I guess, or new heights.
Sure. Well, the idea is that, first of all, we want to distinguish the look of the Swords and Wizardry stuff from the look of the 5th edition stuff, because Frog God is doing a lot of 5th edition stuff. And, you know, Swords and Wizardry fans kind of deserve a different look that's more based in, you know, how the game works, and also, the fact that we've got, you know, a lot of people, you know, who have been playing it for a long time, and it's because it's OD&D. And so, you know, some of the aesthetics of OD&D, we're going to be publishing the new Swords and Wizardry stuff in digest size. We're going to continue doing that. Unless it, you know, becomes totally unworkable for, you know, how much space I use in writing modules or whatever it may be. But the plan is we're going to be doing everything in digest size so that you can put your stuff into the box. We're going to be publishing we're going to be publishing supplements, and the number one thing for the supplements is going to be monsters, because the Monstrosities book has sold out. It's not going to be reprinted because the number of pages of it would make it incredibly expensive and above the price point. Paper has become more expensive from the time that we originally published that. So what we're going to do is we're going to do them bit by bit through the supplements. The resources that people need to have with monsters, because the only monsters that I've got in the core books are, once again, the only the monsters that were in the original OD&D books.
Okay.
And so all of the others, you know, even if it's something that's really familiar from AD&D, is considered, you know, new from the standpoint of Swords and Wizardry. So we're going to have the new monsters in those books. And so those supplements will be less exciting to the people who already have monstrosities, but they're going to be out there. And then we're going to have some of those supplements will have alternate or, alternate rules that people can use. Optional rules. Oh, that's the word.
I was optional thinking. Variant. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, for example, there are things that I do, you know, one of the things about Swords and Wizardry is that it's as open as OD&D. So, you know, there are going to be plenty of things where people house rule stuff, and people who house rule stuff like to look at what their alternatives are. And so, you know, we'll publish some of those here's what this alternate rule looks like, and here's what it does. You know, here's the reason why you might or might not want to use this in your game. And so there'll be those. We may get a couple of just commentary articles from people back when we were doing Noxspell Magazine. There's a lot of very thoughtful stuff that comes from the community. We got a set of jousting rules that were excellent. So there may be, you know, there'll be material like that in those. And then separately from the supplements, we're going to come out with modules that are also the digest size. And those will be, you know, probably less talky than what is the norm that's expected by a fifth edition audience. We're generally more familiar with this, a more stripped down version of it. And I'll say at the outset, since once again, we talked about how people divide into two very set sides. I do box text. I do it a lot less than most people do, but I do box set because I like as a DM, I like to have a sort of a reference at the beginning for what is going to show up in the paragraph. So we're not looking at steading of the Hill Giant Chief.
Oh God, classic adventures, by the way. It was adventures like G1 through 3, which showed me how to write adventures as a kid that weren't just like a sheet of graph paper all filled up with boxes and rooms.
Yeah.
So,
but you know, one of the benefits to box text is that you don't end up in a situation with, oh, right. There's a 40-foot tall idol in the room. I forgot to mention it was back here in the bottom of the paragraph and I forgot to read that.
Right. Oh, which I've done with stuff that I've actually written for myself. It's like, oh man, yeah, I should know because I wrote this. How did I forget that?
Yeah, I kind of hate to admit that the reason that I probably use box set is because I've got a crappy memory for stuff like that. But you know, hey, that's valid.
Now you bring up Noxspell, and Noxspell issue number 6, the final issue, by the way, was my first published work. So I do appreciate you actually taking my bard class and putting it up against who was it? The guy who did does all the nod work, Stadler. You had two bard class variants published in that. One of them was mine. So, and of course, I had the distinction of apparently killing the magazine. So,
now it's so much work to put together a magazine where you have to edit all of the stuff that comes in from contributors that it wasn't something that I could keep doing, and plus, you know, just other stuff was taking up my time at that point, and I didn't have the time to allocate to doing it. So
that's fine, but I was just like, wow, I guess my timing was pretty bad, damn it. Oh God. So now, all right, more personal note, Matt. What do you have, any of your own projects going on that aren't Through the Frogs right now, or
not right at the moment? Works? I mean, I've got the Jordaba, the World of Jordaba campaign that's out there, but I got pulled back into doing lots and lots of stuff at Frog God, and I haven't really had a chance to pick that up. So I mean, I canceled the Patreon that I had running on that so that I could spend more time on the Frog God stuff. And, I'm sure that I'll publish more Jordaba stuff later on, probably through Drive-Thru. It's possible that we might have that coming in through the Frogs, but I doubt it. So, just because of the complexity of, you know, getting handling the intellectual property on that would be kind of a pain in the ass. But
No, understandable. So as I mentioned to you last night, right, with the, I'm not going to even call this renewed interest in Swords of Witchery, but with a certain heightened interest in Swords of Witchery, I think it's going to be time to bring back Swords of Witchery Appreciation Day. So I'm going to try to aim for some time at the end of February for that. I'll start getting stuff together on a blog and recruiting other bloggers and podcasters and YouTubers to get stuff ready to contribute on their end. But I think that this is a rising tide, not just for the OSR, but specifically for Swords and Witchery. I like to see it help people.
You know? Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, like you said, I think it's heightened interest in it. Interest in it, you know, just because this is such an old game starting in 2008, you know, there are spikes in interest. You know, the thing with games, you know, people will get super excited about one game and then that'll plane down a little bit, and then there'll be interest in another OSR game, and then that'll plane down. You know, Swords and Wizardry has been through several of those cycles where there was a whole bunch of, you know, hey, Swords and Wizardry this, Swords and Wizardry that, and then it, you know, and then it goes away and comes up. And I think we're on one of those upswings right now. So that's going to be cool.
Yeah, it's time to catch the wave. You know, I'm working on the Torchlight Zine. I've got a large number of volunteers that are busting their asses, so hopefully we'll get something out before the end of February too. So, yeah, it is more complicated than one would think when you imagine doing it. I've noticed that.
Yeah, I told you, Noxbell.
Yes, yes. God bless us.
It's a lot of work.
Well, Matt, listen. Thank you for spending time and holy again, holy shit! I can't believe how well this Kickstarter is doing. My prediction, like I said last night, 120K.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, mine, and I put it in writing, was 90, and I sort of thought, yeah, I should raise that to 95, but I forgot to say that out loud. So, and Pex is 100. I want to up mine to 95, but I, you know, we'll see. It's most certainly in a zone right now where it's likely to hit 90. Just, you know, from looking at Kickstarter stuff, and if everything goes sort of normally in the way that Kickstarters work, 90 would now probably be in the low end, and it's conceivable that it could hit your 126 figure that you came out with, although I think that would be pretty aggressive.
Oh,
even based on how we're doing now.
You know, I'd like to be aggressive when I make OSR predictions. I did the same with James Bond's Hero's Journey, second edition. And he was just like, yeah, I'll be happy if it hits 10. I'm like, dude, you're going to hit between 20 and 25. And I think right now it's like 24.
Yeah. And that's another Kickstarter people should take a look at, by the way. It's, and originally the Hero's Journey one was based on, Swords and Wizardry, but James is an absolute middle earth expert, you know, like totally expert level on that. And so people who like, the idea of Tolkien type adventuring should absolutely take a look at that.
Yeah, James does great work. Now, before I we have a question in the chat. Does Swords of Witchery Light come with pregens? No, and I don't think there's plans to ever do pregens for Swords of Witchery Light. I run it at conventions exclusively, and players who have never played Swords of Witchery or even OSR games get characters up and running in 10 to 15 minutes, and it's their character. You know, nobody handed him a character. They rolled it out. They're attached to it. So I think that's the whole secret to Swords of Witchery Light.
Yeah, getting people attached to their characters is a good point of rolling stuff up, even if it's only, you know, a 10-minute process.
Right, and even with the regular Swords of Witchery rules, you could probably do it in 15 to 20. Just a little bit longer.
Well, I mean, 10 was where my estimate was, except for buying equipment. That, you know,
that's what I'm putting the extras, because, you know, people like to shop. I understand that. I personally don't. I do all my shopping on Amazon, but there are people like Rage that shopping is just an experience, and it's the same thing with gaming. When it comes to role playing games, a lot of people like the experience of going through that list and shopping, and it'll take up time. unless you decide to do a pre-generated equipment list for people, you could do that, Datum.
I think that stretch goal's already fallen. I think we're doing that already.
Oh, all right. Well, then there you go. You see?
That. Yeah, because that was one of the things that did make sense to me was that, you know, if I'm playing a first level magic user, actually magic user is a bad example because they're easy, but say I'm playing a first level fighter, and I don't know whether I might, you know, am I carrying torches, you know, do I have, can I afford a holy symbol? And it's like, you know, it's kind of useful to have that, you know, here's a set of stuff, you know, that's going to fall under such and such a gold piece amount. You know, just, you can get this whole set and then you can look and find out what you even bought later on once you're playing. And a few of those, and probably throw in some of the creative, stuff that I've seen people bring into adventures. And have that is something I can see as a time saver that would be useful.
Definitely.
A bookmark, which I just still don't get why people would want to print out a bookmark, but a lot of people do. So
no, I know. I don't know either, Matt. I don't know either. Well, again, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. We've already had Pex yesterday. We have you today. I know Pex is busy scheduling others. And I also have some folks from the Torchlight Zine that are going to be making appearances here on the Tavern Chat podcast. So we're going to be hearing from a lot of creators that are involved with Swords and Wizardry on one level or another. So if you haven't yet, check out the Kickstarter. You can just do Swords and Wizardry Kickstarter. It should take you to it if you do it at Google or one of the other search engines. So, again, thanks to my live listeners. They've been great.
Thanks, everyone.
All right, folks. As always, be safe, be well. God bless. Roll those dice. And we'll talk with you all tomorrow. Later, folks.